And I will start with my Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. That's
as I said last night in the text that I pushed out, since it's our first Sabbath back together since the feast, at least I thought it was going to be, but we'll record this. And anyway, I just really thought it'd be a really good idea. I know I was thinking this week about, kind of what I'd learned this feast, and I just thought it would be a good day to huddle up and take stock in what we learned, to kind of share those things with one another so that we can all benefit from what each other got out of it. And it's kind of a good way, I think, to solidify things so that they just, we don't lose it. It don't just slip away and we get into the normal grind and everything, getting caught up in work and everything, and shuffle of getting home, and just forget the lessons. So our theme today is lessons from the feast. And the message today is basically me taking the first turn, if you will. It's going to be a shorter than normal message so that we can have time for the rest of us to share as well. I want to give you guys time to have the floor. Like I said, it's been on my mind, and I wanted you guys coming prepared ahead of time. So that's why I sent the message out last night, to be thinking about it. So this would be on your mind ahead of time too. For me, this feast had a very special focus to it, and I was very intentional about it. And for all of you guys here that attended in Colorado, you know what I'm talking about. For the rest of you guys, let me just briefly explain. While I was driving to the feast, I began to think about what I wanted out of it. We had several hours of driving to get there, some windshield time, and so I've said over and over again throughout the years that you get out of the feast what you put into it. And I really liked Judy's comment last night. I thought it was very on point, that her favorite message this last feast was one about putting in the work, being engaged is in the whole process. And it certainly applies to the feast days, because it's true, you get out of the feast what you put into it, what you sow into it. But the cool thing about the feast is it's not work. To me, the feast is like a long Sabbath, right? Like the Sabbath, you get to put the worries and the cares of your normal life, you get to just put all that behind you. You leave that environment completely, even. And you just leave all that behind. You're not working your job. You're resting, you're enjoying your family, you're having lots of extra time to draw close to God and to really work on that relationship. And it occurred to me while driving that the feast is all about relationships. First, of course, with our Father in heaven, but also with each other. And really, the feast pictures the epitome of relationship, because we will be married to Yeshua. We will be members of the family of God. We'll be in the greatest relationship that there ever will be. And then, and even past that, when you think about the millennium, what will we be doing during that time? We'll be pouring ourselves out into other people's lives. We'll be directing them and guiding them towards the Father. And what kind of relationships are we going to build during that time with these people as we do that? So really, the feast is a lot about relationships. So I decided on the way that I was going to be very intentional about it this year. I was going to really work on relationships. And I got to spend extra time with the Father in prayer. I got to spend extra time in study. But from there, I made the announcement on the first day of the feast that I wanted to carve out dedicated one-on-one time with each person there. Time to just sit and talk with no distractions, one-on-one, one at a time, and just dedicated to that person at that moment. Now, I had my reasons, but I also wanted it to be whatever they wanted it to be, too. And as I'd explained in each of those individual discussions, at least from my side of it, last year was very difficult for me. And as I thought about it, I realized that the stress of some of the situations caused me to blow it at times. And I wanted to be transparent about that. I wanted to make sure that I did everything I could to heal any wounds that I may have caused. And I wanted also for that time to be again whatever they wanted it to be as well, to talk about anything they wanted to talk about. And I can say after the fact, I thoroughly enjoyed and completely enjoyed every moment of every one of those discussions. Between those and my extra time with the Father, they were the highlight of my feast. Now, I'd like to share collectively what I brought away from that. Now, I'm not going to talk about details, of course. There were many, many individual things, and those of you that I met with knows what some of those are. But there was a major one for me. One major thing that sort of encapsulated at least my side of the sharing and what really motivated a lot of this. And in a word, it's the best word I can come up with, is failure. 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 Facing my fears, or not my fears, my failures rather, for this past year made me see the good in it. Made me see the good in it. Failure is good. Is failure good? I'm going to say yes, it is, in a sense. It's good. Now stay with me, and hopefully I won't ramble trying to get the point across, because failure can be healthy. Guys, failure in this life, I'm going to say it's a given. Don't ever be surprised by it. It's a given. And failure is okay as long as you learn from it. Failure can be good. It can be healthy. There is a saying that failure is the world's greatest teacher. The world's greatest teacher. And that teacher taught me a lot this year. When you think of a great teacher, you know, who do you think of? You think of someone maybe successful that is able then to share that knowledge. Someone maybe with tremendous skill or talent. Most people think of success as being the standard that qualifies you to be a great teacher. But here's the thing. Success never comes without failure at some level. You can't appreciate being at the top of the mountain unless you've slipped a zillion times climbing up the dang thing. Failure truly is the greatest teacher. One who's been at the top and the bottom is the greatest teacher of all. And this is what really makes Yeshua, if you think about it, the greatest of all teachers. Think about him. Think about his life. He lived success at the highest level, didn't he? He was the most popular rabbi that there ever was. He taught, and when he spoke with words of power, right? I mean, he was the epitome of that. And then he experienced what I would say would be the gravest, right? Literally, failure. Why? At the end of his life, he was spit on, he was mocked, and he was murdered. Okay? He lived at both ends of the spectrum and everywhere in between. And this is what made him a perfect mediator between us and the Father. Because he can relate to everything we could ever go through. Failure is a part of physical life, and certainly spiritual life. And we have to own it. We have to face it, and then we have to allow it to teach us. And then just pick up, dust off, and move on. In those failures are lessons that you will never, ever, ever learn any other way. And I submit to you that that is precisely why our Father has created this whole scenario here on this earth. Because it is almost geared toward creating failure. It's geared towards teaching us how to learn from failure, because we are going to fail. We don't grow much if we don't. I read a story last night while reading about failure in preparation for this. It was about a gentleman who was a very successful businessman. He was he had been a Navy SEAL. He'd flown helicopters for presidents, and he was a multi-million dollar trader on Wall Street. He had a business locally in his hometown that was worth about $10 million. It was a remodeling business. And at one point, the man went away for an extended period of time, and he took his 25-year-old son and he put him at the helm of that company. And, you know, the son did well. The market was booming. Everything was going good. He made all the right decisions. The business grew and did very, very well. But the dad had to come back to him, and he had to say, "Son," he said, I need to tell you, you need to tone that ego down a little bit. Yeah, you made some good choices. Yeah, you've done well. You've grown the business. But he says, here's the thing. You've never experienced a downturn in the housing market. You've never experienced what that's like. And he said, when that happens, you aren't going to have a clue what to do, and you're going to fail. Because he knew. Because he had experience. He'd already failed in the housing market several times before. And he knew how to navigate that market from the valleys and the mountaintops, right? Now, that's a secular story, but it's exactly what I'm talking about. There's no greater teacher than failure. Nobody likes it. You know, you hate it. Nobody wants to fail. It's embarrassing. It's humiliating. And many times there are severe consequences. But oftentimes failure is the very thing. It is the thing then that brings success in that very same area. You can point to a zillion stories. For instance, a man went bankrupt several times in his life. He finally was hired on a note for a local newspaper, and they ended up firing him for a lack of ideas. They fired him for a lack of ideas, this man. You know who it was? Walt Disney. Yeah. There was a man who failed the sixth grade. Lifetime of setbacks. As a senior citizen, he became the Prime Minister of England. And he helped stop the world from Nazi domination. Winston Churchill. Epic failure up to that point. Do you know that Colonel Sanders had three restaurants fail? He was in his 70s, I think, or 80s, bankrupt when he started Kentucky Fried Chicken. You can look back and read about all sorts of inventions by famous inventors And almost every single one of them are basically the last attempt of a string of failures to get it done. Okay? And all this is applied and magnified on a spiritual level. If viewed and handled properly, failures are the stepping stones to growth. If obedience is learned through suffering, then character is forged through failure. I'll read that again. If obedience is learned through suffering, then character is forged through failure. I don't have to like my failures. I don't glory in them at all. I want to put them past me. I don't have to like it. But wouldn't it be a crying shame not to learn from them and grow from them? I mean, if you have them and you have to deal with them, if you have to suffer through them and suffer the consequences of them, it's just a shame if you don't learn the lesson from them. So now for me, failure is the seed of growth. Failure offers the opportunity to reflect. It allows for reflection. It can stop us dead in our tracks. And it just demands of us that we rethink the direction, the strategy, and the reasons for why we do what we do. Failure offers the opportunity to regroup. As we are trying to achieve success in all areas of life, things, many times, they just slowly kind of fall apart, don't they? You know, just time moves on, motivations change, priorities shift. And you have to adjust to that change. See, something that worked before may not work as things change. And you may fail using that same strategy. Or you realize, guys, this universe right now, and this is maybe just a little bit of a bunny trail, but we are going, and scientists will tell you this, right, that everything in this universe is moving from a state of order to a state of chaos. Everything is degenerating all the time. Okay? That is the state of the universe, of things right now, because of the fall, because of Satan and all of this. Okay? It's why that whole evolution thing that would accidentally create something better and better and better is absurd. It's absolutely absurd. Randomness does not create order. Randomness creates more chaos. And that's the state that we are in right now. And I think, you know, maybe later, after Satan is banished and all of that, God restores the order, and we won't be living in a constant state of decay. That's the word I was looking for. Okay? Everything decays. It moves towards destruction, not the other way around. The natural right now is moving towards chaos, not order. So in a sense, the system, if you will, is ripe to support failure, for failure to happen. And so failure then forces us to see the regression that is really behind the scenes, and regroup again, and reset, and reestablish order again. To reset yourself, to reorient. See, those are the words that come to mind. To get back to the order that will cause the desired result. And where do we get that order? Where do we get that instruction and how to do that? From the Word of God. And from God's Spirit guiding and directing us. Lastly, failure offers the opportunity to reconnect. It brings reconnection. Failures allow us to reconnect and reevaluate our goals, to reconnect our relationships, to reconnect with strategies that are you know, in the proper order for whatever we're doing. If handled correctly, failures will first reconnect us to our Creator if we confess it. See, that's what he says. Come and confess these things. Talk to him about it, right? Acknowledge them, right? That's what he says. Come to me and acknowledge, and I will read, and I will direct your steps, right? So if handled correctly, that's what we get. And getting them out in the open, allowing for a deeper, more intimate relationship, and a clearer vision is what comes. We can allow this to reconnect us to our loved ones. And you know, a lot of times, like some of you, you suffered through some of my failures last year, you know? And so being able to reconnect and reestablish that and realign to make sure that that's the top priority is important. And this was my experience this feast, and I won't forget it. I treasure all of those discussions that I had. In the end, failure is not the dark side sent by Satan so to make you miserable. Failure is not a sign that you're a terrible person. Failure is the sharpening stone for your sword. It's the fire to purify you. It is the resistance, if you will, in your weight training. Success and failure are two sides of the very same coin. You simply will never experience one without the other. You won't. You will not experience success without failure. It will not happen. So accept that it will happen and then address it for what it is, the greatest teacher. And guys, this is all through the Word of God. Think about what happened to Joseph. That guy failed miserably with his brothers. I mean, he displayed so much immaturity as a young man that they wanted him completely out of their lives, didn't they? I mean, you talk about being shunned and abandoned, right? Complete failure with his family in that sense. But in the end, the lessons that he learned from that, you know, his life then, you know, we read full circle, he becomes second in command and able to say this later in Genesis chapter 50, 20 to 21. It says, "But as for you," this is him speaking, "you meant evil against me," speaking to his brothers, "but God meant it for good, in order to bring it about as it is this day to save many people alive. Now, therefore, do not be afraid. I'll provide for you and your little ones." And he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. What the enemy meant means for destruction, right? To bring chaos from order, God uses for good if we embrace the process and learn from it. Paul said it like this, Romans 8:28. "We know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to His purpose." You ever notice that it doesn't say, "God, make sure that everything in your life is always good"? It's not what it says. It says He works all of these things for good. The failures, the destruction, the hard times, the trials, He works it all towards good. Okay, it's what's happening here. We got to be able to see it. Our Father doesn't see failure. He sees lessons. He sees teaching moments. We used to talk about that all the time. You know, you're raising kids. There's failures, right? All the time. They do dumbest stuff over and over again. And what do you use those for? Teaching moments. Right? And that's what God sees. These are moments to reflect, regroup, and reconnect with the order that God lays out for us. See, with God, he doesn't see ultimate failure. This is what he sees. He sees this in James 1, verses 2 to 4. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials. I'm going to say failures. Count it joy when you fail. Knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience, but let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Failures produce patience in moving forward. They bring maturity, which is what this is saying. When we say that, you know, that you may be perfect and complete, it's talking about maturity, okay? You see, with the Father, there's no such thing as failure for the one who keeps his eyes on the prize, for the ones that keep, that just keep on keeping on and pressing forward. Notice Hebrews here. Hebrews 12, 1 and 2. Therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin, and I stuck in there, failures. Let us lay them aside. The sin and failures which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Looking unto Yeshua, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Failure only exists if you don't get back up. You see, the second that you acknowledge that failure and you do what we're talking about, the second you've done that and you get back up, that very second you've beaten that failure. And you've stepped back on the road to success. You've stepped back on the path to growth and maturity. Indeed, failure seems to be the pattern for success in the kingdom. I could read all the stories from the Word to you, but I don't want to take up all of our time today. But I just want to remind you of a few of them. Just recall these. Jacob failed miserably multiple times before becoming the patriarch of the 12 tribes. Joseph failed because of his pride before becoming Pharaoh's right-hand man. We talked about that one. Moses failed in Egypt, didn't he? He killed a man before becoming the greatest leader in the history of Israel. Aaron failed during the incident with the golden calf before becoming the most well-known high priest of all time. David failed morally, terribly, before becoming the greatest king in Israel's history. And Peter failed by denying Christ before becoming a great apostle. And you know, this is a bit of a stretch, but, you know, just bear with me. Because even Yeshua, in a sense, he failed. He was interacting with the religious leadership of the time, wasn't he? Trying to teach them and convince them of a lot of the things that they were adding to the law and a lot of this stuff that they were doing that you just don't need to be doing. Was he successful in that? No. They killed him. Okay? So, all of these people, all of these stories have one thing in common, don't they? They all refused to quit. They got back up. And if you think about it, of one of them really got back up, and that was Yeshua. He got back up out of the grave. Okay? Think about what he said. John 2:19. Yeshua answered and said to them, "Destroy this temple and in 3 days I'll raise it up." You realize what that's saying? That is, it's recognizing that failure, destruction, moving to chaos is inevitable. However, it always leads to building something stronger and better. Consider that. Sometimes destruction is okay because it's the only way that the old, that those failed ideas or failed ideas, failed ways of doing things get out of the way so that something better can be built in its place. Sometimes we have to have failure to see the things in our lives and our character that needs destroyed, so that then we can build the better things back in their place. You see, all those stories didn't stop with, like, David committing adultery and murder, with Moses running into the desert after killing the guy, with Aaron, you know, his story didn't end at the golden calf. Peter's story didn't end with denying Christ three times. They went on. And those epic failures were the pivotal catalysts in each one of their lives for a change in their character, in their spiritual development, that change that was necessary to bring them to their destiny. As the psalmist says, sorrow only lasts for a night, but joy comes in the morning. This feast, I embrace some failures. With some of you individually, some of them publicly. Others, more others, privately. But I did some of them openly, candidly, and I learned from them. Hopefully, right? And you know, I'm freed from the burden of it. I'm focused now on just dusting off, on redirecting, regrouping, reconnecting, and moving forward. I came away from this feast with these words of Paul in mind. Brethren, I do not count myself to have apprehended. But one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forward to those things which are ahead, I press forward. I press towards the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Yeshua Messiah. Amen. Amen.